we're going to be knitting together two things that usually aren't brought together. So we're going to be going and taking a look at the Yiddishkeit side of us and a bunch of the insights we can get, the mindset that is developed here in the Beis Medrash, and then also wedding it together with entrepreneurship. What do we have about entrepreneurial mindset that we might be able to go and have interactions between the two of them and be able to get stronger from being able to go and borrow both from our Mesorah and also from some of the lenses that we can have when it comes to what entrepreneurs do and what we might be able to learn from them. And that's why I've spent about the last 20 years of my life going and doing the entrepreneurial side of it and the entire life going and being able to understand the Yiddishkeit side of it. And it's the mating of the two that is a very powerful combination of what we want to go and do. Let's go and talk about a little bit of Inyana Diyoma, though, first. What Hebrew month are we in right now? Cheshvan. What's our nickname for Cheshvan? So Mar Cheshvan. Bitter Cheshvan. Why do we go and call Cheshvan Mar? Okay, no holidays. So if we go and take a look at the criteria that we would go and use. First off, Cheshvan, there's no holidays. What other criteria might we go and look at for whether to declare a month Mar? What else would go into that? Okay, so other things that were the downside piece. Okay, interesting. What other things we go into? So there's the downside part. Okay, was that so devastating that we go and declare its home for it? That we go and do a fast? So it wasn't quite that devastating in terms of that. We don't have that as a feature of Cheshvan. Who wants to go and nominate another month that might be better called Mar? What other month? Av. So we have what? Why are you declaring Av? Because? Okay, Churban Beis HaMikdash, it's happening within Av. What else happens within Av, though? Tu B'Av. How important is Tu B'Av? Very. One of the two happiest days of the year. Look at that. We know someone who knows Barba Basra has gotten to Kuch Haf Olive there, deep into the Masechta. One of the two happiest days of the year is Tu B'Av. So does Av deserve to be called Mar? No, I don't think so. If we have one of the two happiest there. What would be next? What else would we go and declare Mar? Tammuz? Why Tammuz, like you? Okay, so we have the Korban part of it, and no upside, no holiday, no... we had Cheshvan coming on the heels of Yom Simchaseinu, none of that, but also no fast day. In Tammuz, we have the fast day. We have the beginning of the 3 weeks. We have a whole bunch of ways in which there's a devastating thing that happened for us. And so we're going to go and declare anything Mar. We should be calling Tammuz Mar rather than Cheshvan. So let's go and plant that as a question that we're going to come back around to, and we're going to see what kind of a lens we might have on it after we go and see a little bit from our Mesorah, a little bit from entrepreneurship, and we'll see if anyone has any thoughts on maybe a different lens that we have on why Cheshvan is the Mar and why it really does deserve to be that. So with that as our intro into there, let's go and take a step back, take a look at something that there's very little data on entrepreneurship. Has anyone heard that there's a high rate of failure within those companies? Oh, that seems to have made its way around. I guess people do know that kind of fact about it. How does it feel to fail? This is saying that it happens a lot when that happens to them. Is that an easy thing to go and deal with? How does it feel when you fail? Pretty devastating. Natural recoil, natural ways in which we try to avoid it, and when it happens to us, can be quite devastating. When we're going and having that kind of thing hit us, we have all sorts of ways that it's going to be a minus. There's all sorts of ways we might be able to go and get some insights into what are the reasons for failure. So if we first go and take a look at the ways in which we might be able to go understand what are the sources of it that then might lead into, what are the diagnoses that we might be able to go and do, let's go and see what some of the sources are. And we're going to see some echoes in other parts of our lives as we go and take a look at it. There was a study that was done 30 years ago taking a look at what are the reasons for failure within the highest potential of startups? The ones that were good enough to be able to go and get money from the top investors, they're called venture capitalists. What would you think is the biggest reason for failure within those startups?
Wasn't it the idea couldn't scale up?
Okay, so the idea wasn't going to be able to grow, didn't have enough of a market to grow on it, things like that. So the product and other things like that. Why else? Okay, so running out of the money and not being able to attract that. What else? Lack of experience by who?
By the entrepreneur.
Okay, so the people part of it. Okay. Competition, so the market side of that piece of it. Okay, and so when we're going and taking a look at the reasons for failure, there was a researcher, a guy named Bill Salmon, who became a close colleague of mine at Harvard, who was going in thinking a bunch of the things that you guys were starting out with, the market, the product, missing it with the idea. Today, as you guys, the ones who have done a bit with Eugene in terms of the entrepreneurship side, when they didn't have product market fit, there wasn't that language back then, but that's a lot of what they went and found. And it was indeed the case that those reasons for failure were a little bit more than a third of the reasons. However, there was one reason, though, that swamped all the rest of the reasons. Okay, so it's back to the product, missing the market, not having product market fit.
Management.
Okay, the management part, the not ready for what they're doing. So that's a little bit the preparation. That's a little bit of the Bein Adam La'atzmo, making sure that you're prepared for it. But it was actually the Bein Adam La'chavero part that was the biggest reason that these things came crashing down. The tensions between the founders, the ways in which we are not going and able to have it become a productive team, the way in which they were not going and having the compatibility and being able to go and have the ways in which they're going to be able to go and form a cohesive ability to go and read the market, design a product, and be able to bring it to there. The people side, the soft, squishy pieces, were the toughest thing that were bringing down these ventures. So we go and take a look at that reason for failure. It highlights a bit. You guys were just out on the basketball court. You're learning there how to do the Bein Adam La'chavero, how to go and have the interpersonal that when you're going out into the world is so critical for you to be able to go and make sure that you have the best foundation to be able to go and have a smashing success and a high-impact startup. And so these are some of the ways that you're going to have echoes in every part of our lives. Even the recess is going to be going and informing you about the mitos that you're going and building, and also the ways in which when you go out to conquer the world through a startup, that you're going to be able to go and apply them. And so we have to see the way in which there's carryover across all of these different pieces of it. Let's go and take a look at a bit of the recoil side when you go and have that failure. If you went and found it with a friend and you had a bunch of tensions, is that going to feel good when your startup blows up? That's going to be the bump in the road. That's going to be the recoiling. That's going to be the devastation for you. This is the natural way in which we see failure. Let's go and step back and take a look at a little bit of a case study. Are there any baseball fans in here? Okay, we've got a sea of hands for a bunch of people who are going and doing that. This is going long, long ago. Maybe this is the reason why we have some of the fathers around here. Anyone recognize who this is? Okay, no, even further back in time. No, not quite that far back. This is Tommy John. Is that surgery? That's always the first word that we go and associate with Tommy John. I'm going to ask you to come along for a ride now, where hopefully by the end of it, you will think Tommy John Gamzulatova. Let's go and try to replace surgery with a very different thing about the mindset and going and seeing how we can go and bring what Chazal taught us millennia ago and how we can go and see how you go and deal with the devastating setbacks that he went and dealt with. So let's go and see a little bit about him. He was a natural athlete, picked up a baseball, would go and fling it, and magic would come out of his arm. He was also great at basketball, could have gone that route in terms of where he wanted to go, decided to go and bet on baseball. So he's drafted by the Dodgers. He's going and playing. Early career, this natural athlete, this was his record, between 9 and 16 wins each season. How's that sound? Sound pretty good? Okay. Yeah, he's doing pretty well. Major league pitcher, winning with that kind of a record there. The last of the years that we have here, 13 wins before the All-Star game. How are you feeling if you're Tommy at that point? What's within reach? What's the ultimate for a baseball pitcher?
Cy Young.
Cy Young, maybe the 20-win season, bunch of things that he sees. I'm hitting towards this. This is finally culminating in something for me. One pitch he throws that July, and he rips his arm to shreds. You've gone from the heights to the depths. How are you feeling if you're Tommy right now? Does that feel good? Or is it that recoil that we were seeing from there? You wouldn't go and blame him if he didn't go back home, why me, and just go kick back and watch TV the rest of my life and get 20 pounds fatter. There's all sorts of ways in which the moping and the ways in which we were going to recoil from failure are what was very likely of what Tommy was going to be going and doing. So he goes under the surgery knife. They go and operate on him. Let's go and reach back now to a lot further back in time to go and see a bit of the lens that we can take on some of the things we might be able to see from this case study that we're going to come back to after this. Gamzulatova, people familiar with that? Okay, who is the ultimate of Gamzulatova in the Gemara? Nachumich Gamzu, named for the Gamzulatova mindset that he developed in himself. Who was his Talmid Muvhak? Anyone know who that was? Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva that had had that developed in his mindset. Okay, very good, Akiva. Okay, and so Rabbi Akiva is a paragon of it, a model of it in the Gemara. Anyone here done brachos? Brachos daf samek, get to the way end of it. What do we learn about Rabbi Akiva? What does it tell us, a story about Rabbi Akiva with Gamza Latova? That what? Okay, the donkey when he was going. This is when Rabbi Akiva was setting out to get to a town. He gets to the town and there isn't housing for him there. And now he's stranded out in the wilderness outside of the town. How are you feeling right now? A setback. Does that feel good?
No.
No, pretty devastating in terms of that. He's going and he's in the middle of nowhere, but what had Nachum Ish Gamzu gone and developed in Rabbi Akiva? The mindset of whenever there's a setback, what do you say to yourself? Gamzu Latova. So he says that to himself and he keeps going. He has two companions, essentially, if you go on and go and call it that. He has his donkey and he has his candle. And this is where he can go and be able to see some way that he can go and see some bright light literally and some ways that he can go and keep himself going through the night. Then what happens to his donkey? Wild animal kills it. How are you feeling for Rabbi Akiva? Feel good? But what do you go and react to? What do you say? Gamza Latova. Then what happens next? Candle blows out. Feel good? How do you react if you're Rabbi Akiva? Gamza Latova. So this is how he's getting himself through the night. Very admirable amunah. Keep yourself in the game. Have the amunah that this is going to somehow turn out to be better. We're going to take a little bit at that mindset and see how we might want to go and partner with Hashem even a little bit more to go and make that happen, a more proactive approach rather than the reactive. But this is where we have that paragon where we can go and learn from Rabbi Akiva about going and doing that mindset. Okay, and so let's go and take this and now apply this to seeing Tommy John and how he went about going and dealing with this major setback that he had. From the heights to the depths in a split second with one throw of his arm. What did he go and take a look at? In his autobiography, he talks about reaching back to what we had in the Parsha a couple of weeks ago. He said that if Hashem could go and give to Avram and Sarah a son when they were so old, he goes, he misses it by about a decade. He says when Avram was 100 and Sarah was 80, but in the same general direction of when they were so old, if he could do it for them, he can help me get through this. So that's the first of the things that he's going and seizing on, his faith that he was going to go and be able to see that as an aspirational thing. In some ways, the Gamza Latova side of how Rabbi Akiva did it. But then he went and saw some other proactive ways that he could go and be able to get some energy from this. Unfortunately, when he got his arm ripped to shreds, they told him two things. A, Tommy, you're not going to pitch again. And B, your wife is due with your first kid and you're never going to be able to hold her in this arm. Devastation professionally, devastation personally. He set a goal that he wants to be able to go and hold his daughter. So he essentially was going and reaching faith, family, as what that aspiration was for him to go and put the energy into coming back, get up off the couch, and go and do the hishtadlus to be able to go and come back. A couple of other interesting things to the downside part of what he also seized on. When he was getting a little bit of the feeling back in his arm, he went to Dodger Stadium, and he was going and throwing on the sidelines, doing a little bit of pitching. He heard one of the younger players behind him say, "Why is Tommy even trying? He's all washed up. There's no way he can come back." How would you react to hearing that from someone? Would that feel good? What Tommy did was he took it as his chance to go and have a chip on his shoulder of, "I'm going to show them." Doubling down on the energy, I guess he had a real literal chip in his shoulder, as he's going and getting the chip on his shoulder to go and see the extra energy he could take. So Mike Tyson, the chip in the shoulder that he went and brought into the ring to go and have even more of a passion to go and be able to be excelling in that arena. That's what Tommy John went and did. Another thing that he realized, though, is that he had been in a rut. He had essentially gone and thrown the baseball, and it just continued in that way, and he never learned to really pitch. And it's because he had never learned to do it that's why he had caused that damage to his arm. He realized that he was in a rut, that he had never gone and said, "Let me get out of this rut and find the right way to do it." There was a student paper that I had about a decade ago where there was one line in it that I just stared at for about 10 minutes and then put up a copy on my wall. That line was, "It's really easy to get stuck in a rut, especially if you're good at what you do." Say you're doing something, you're pretty good at it, you're going to keep going with it. You're on autopilot, you're just going to persist in that way. It's not until you get a shock from the outside, Hashem sends down a lightning bolt of saying, rethink what you're doing. Go and have a way in which you're going to step back and not just be on autopilot. And this is the way in which Tommy stepped back and said, I have to learn how to pitch now. I never did that. It's always devastating for me. I would not have done this at all if not for the fact that I had this devastating injury. So he went out and found another pitcher, a major leaguer named Mike Marshall. Picture of Mike, in some ways the most valuable Payas award for Mike. Okay, this is a pitcher who had a PhD in kinesiology. And he said to Mike, work with me to go and rebuild my pitching motion. So they are going and putting in all this energy to go and recover with the aspiration of family and faith and being able to have the chip on his shoulder to devote himself to it and the realization that I have to go and involve someone else in being able to go and learn it. These are some of those actionable things that we can see as how we can go and have a partnership with Hashem when we have a setback. Not just that we reactively say, this will be a Gamza L'Tova, I hope, but I can go and seize the day, gain the energy and the knowledge, and then be able to make it into a Gamza L'Tova. And that's where the Hishtadlus and the Shutfus with Hashem is going to be able to come from in terms of going and doing that. So now back to Tommy, in terms of how he was going and pitching. This is when he was whole. This is how he was pitching at that point, the 9-16 wins each season. How much do you think if he was able to get onto the mound at Dodger Stadium in a major league game and throw a pitch, how was he going to feel? Is that going to feel like a success? Huge success. Huge milestone, just be able to go and throw a pitch. Say that you could go and start pitching. How many wins would you go and say, this is my ideal, this is how much I can maybe get to? How much would you hope for?
One
even, okay? So that first one is going to be a huge celebration when you have that go up on the board. In terms of how he did, in terms of when he came back, huge success, even bigger than what he had before. 320 win seasons, more than half of his wins came after the devastating injury. Because he seized the Gamza L'Tova and had a way in which he had partnered with Hashem to be able to go and get stronger from it than what he had had before. The learning how to actually do this, the going and putting in a lot more of the energy than the natural athlete was going and doing, and being able to go and get stronger from a setback is what hopefully we can go and think about next time when I say Tommy John, the reaction is Gamza L'Tova. Not that we go and think Tommy John surgery. It's interesting to go and see in some ways the role modeling that he has. Tommy John surgery that you guys had all heard of. You have catchers who are now going and getting it. Nat Wieters of the Baltimore Orioles. Tommy John is not just that he broke the ground on the surgery. He broke the ground on how these players see they can get stronger from going and having this experience. The mindset that he brought to it, the way in which he approached it, and had all those things aspirationally, and then the added energy that he had as a way to go and improve rather than be defeated by that defeat. And so here, we can go and see a modern framing of this. Is anyone familiar with the book Antifragile? Okay, it's by the author of The Black Swan that you might have heard of. Let's go and think. I know there's a whole bunch of people, engineering-oriented types here. Let's talk about systems when they're designed. What is a fragile system when it hits a bump in the road? What happens to a fragile system? Breaks. It's going to come crashing down. It was a very, very fragile way that it was gone, developed, and go and have that be the setback. That when they're going to go and have the system be hit by it, it's the end of the system. What are we going to aspire to? When you hit that bump in the road, you can at least persist through it. You can keep it. That's a neutral system. What would anti-fragile be? What do you think that anti-fragile is? Gets better. It's designed to be stronger when it goes and hits that bump of the road. Now, Tom, can you think of any examples of any systems that are like that?
Human bones. When a bone breaks, it'll go back thicker than before.
Yeah, interesting. So, the human body. Who designed the human body? The Eibusho went and designed an anti-fragile system that we all have very close to home. What are some of the other ways that the human body was designed to be anti-fragile? Okay, interesting. So that's where a human-designed one that takes the same kind of principle that we see within our human bodies within there. Okay, so we got bones breaking.
It's like calluses when you apply pressure to them, they get harder.
Okay, interesting. Is that a plus for it to get harder?
No,
okay, or a mountain climber, like what Yehuda was just talking about there. Okay, so that might be another one. Kiva? Okay, what are you doing when you exercise? What happens to your muscles? They get ripped. Do you want to really rip your muscles? because they're designed to get stronger from that. And so these are all examples of how you might be able to go and see the ways in which our bodies have been designed to go and get stronger. The ways in which, you have another one? What's a?
Artificial intelligence, because like when it encounters like a tough problem, it like grows from it, learns new ways to like solve it.
Okay, this is where we're modeling it after the human brain, the idealized way in which a setback is getting us to learn from those types of things. Okay, so these are all examples of where we have the anti-fragility. And if we can go and figure out within our lives how we can go and make things anti-fragile, how we can go and reintroduce our mindset of how Gamsa Latova is the way that we're going to be able to go and get stronger from the setbacks rather than being the fragile systems that go crashing down when that happens. And so this is the potential for us to be able to go and do that. Just going to a couple of the pieces here. This is the muscles that are getting ripped as we're going and doing that exercising. Another example, anyone biology here? When we go and get a shot to go and get an injection from for our flu each year, what are we doing to our immune system? You are going and putting flu into your body. Why would we go and do that? We're assaulting our immune system. We're assaulting it in the small in order to be able to go and have it be stronger for when it actually gets assaulted by a real flu virus. This is where the immune system that Hashem went and designed is going and being anti-fragile. And so if we can go and develop in ourselves that same kind of mindset to be able to go and do it, I took the liberty, I don't know if they've come out with a Hebrew version of this yet, but I went and suggested a title that they can go and bring it out in, the Gamsa Latova book. This is where we have the ways in which Brachos Samech is now imported into modern thinking and the way in which we have to go and see the entrepreneurial mindset of being able to go and get more robust from the setbacks, being able to go and have failure become something that goes and forges a stronger one of us. Is the equivalent also of boot camp. What do you have in the army? What are they doing in boot camp? Is that a real war? Are they really preparing for it? What is boot camp enabling them to go and do? Go and prepare in the small. Go and prepare practicing for when you're going to have those setbacks, the challenges when you're in a real war, so that when the real thing comes, you're going to be much better able to go and deal with it. And so we have to see in some ways, how do we go and do boot camp for being able to develop this mindset for ourselves? Anyone have any ideas for how you might be able to go and develop the Gamsa Latova muscle in you to be able to go and have that be ready for practicing on a small thing before you go and do it in the big? Anyone have any thoughts on how you might be able to go and do it? Natan?
Think about past disasters and then assign those Gamsa Latova outlooks.
Okay, so if there were to happen to me, this thing that happened in the past, how would I go and react to it? So in some way, simulate that piece of it. Yehuda?
Step out of your comfort zone a little bit and it'll prepare you for it.
Okay, so try something that is going to be a stretch for you, and you're going to have some kind of setbacks as you grow, but you're going to be able to go and learn how to be able to go and have that be a strengthening exercise for that kind of thing. And so we can go and see some ways in which every day we might be able to go and do that. Anyways, in school, you can see where you might be able to go and practice this kind of thing.
Oh, come on.
What are some of the ways? Mendy, go right ahead. Okay, so look at the ones that you got wrong. And I still remember when I did the Chidon HaTanach, you guys don't do that much here in Boston, but when I did Chidon HaTanach, I remember the one I got wrong. I don't remember the ones I got right. This is now 30 years later or so. This is where if we can go and learn from the setbacks, getting stronger from it, don't just go and focus on where you have check marks next to the questions, as Mendy is saying, but also look at the X's and what you can go and learn from those kinds of answers and things like that. And so this is one thing that we go and when you're in a rush to get to school and you hit a red light, does that feel good? No. How could you go and use that to retrain yourself? Go and ask yourself, how could this be a Gamsa Latova? Just go in that small little thing and find some way that it became a plus for you. Last night when I was driving back from New York to Boston, I put on one of my favorite shirim because it actually looked like we were going to have a bunch of traffic. What does that mean when you hit traffic and you're really enjoying what you're listening to? That's actually a bracha, that you go and hit a delay. I would be bummed if the traffic had disappeared and I'm in the middle of the shear still when I pull in into the driveway. Find ways to structure things that it's actually a plus for you, that you actually have a way that you're getting stronger from that kind of a setback. And as many were saying, with the grading and things like that you have here in school, being able to go and learn from that, seeing it as an opportunity Not the natural recoil that we see when we don't do as well as we wanted on a test, but being able to go and see that as a bracha, that it's going to be able to do that for us. So this is now in the Bein Adam LeAtzmo part, within our own heads. Let's now go up to the level of where we started off with the founding team failures of the Bein Adam LeChavero, the interactions that you have. Say you're across the table from someone and they're telling you bad news, criticizing you. How is that feeling? Does that feel good? No, it's another one of those recoil, head down on the desk type of situations. Let's go and take a little bit different lens on that type of thing. We're going to see it through the lens of the founding team of the world, what we just learned 3 weeks ago. How does the Torah refer to the relationship between our co-founders of the world, between Adam and Chava? Two words. What does it refer to it as? Azir Kenegdo. Very much a contradiction in terms. Helper against you. We can go and see. What does Rashi say? Anyone remember what Rashi says about what that means? Go ahead.
If you're good, she'll help you, but otherwise she'll be against you.
Okay, so if you are Zoche, then it'll be an Azir. And if you're not Zoche, it's going to be a Kenegdo. So what is when we get pushback? What does that say? Well, this is pretty bad. I'm recalling from it. I'm not Zoche to be able to go and get the Azir. So what does that say about the Kenegdo? We want to avoid it. So that's the Rashi perspective on it. The Netziv has a very different perspective on it. That's a lot more how I like to go and think about it. What does the Netziv say about it? The Kenegdo is a bracha unto itself. The Kenegdo is something that is helping us. And what we have to do is welcome both sides of it. When there's the Azir, that's a bracha. And when there's the Kenegdo, that is also a bracha. We have to go in, just like we had with the recoiling from failure, we have to go and retrain ourselves to be able to go and see the criticism, the setbacks, when it comes to the Bein Adam LeChavero, as seeing that as a bracha also. So if we go and take that as a piece of it, let me go and tap some research. Got a few of the musicians here. Some research that's been done on grumpy orchestras. What type of orchestra do you think is going to go and play better? The ones who all get along really nicely together, or the ones who are grumpy? They're not getting along so well. Which would you think? The ones who get along? It's actually the grumpy orchestras that play better. The ones who have the creative tension, the ones who are going and trying to raise each other's game, being able to go and push back on each other to go and have them reach better when it comes to the performance that they're going into. And so in some ways that we have an echo there of the Kenegdo side of it. This is here, going back to, I guess, the metaphor that we had from the muscles and things like that. These are the Harrison twins, champion bodybuilders. This is in some ways a visual of what they say is their biggest benefit to each other, that they push each other. They are going and competing between the two of them to go and reach greater heights, and that's what they go and attribute, the Kenegdo part of being a brother, that they are going and being able to see that as that's making us stronger than we would have been than if we were not a twin, and we did not have that other force across the way from us. You guys experience this every day. What is the best of the Chavrusas? Is it an Azir? Or is it an Azir Kenegdo? When you have both of them going on at the same time. What was an iconic Chavrusa in the Gemara? Yehuda? Okay, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. What happened? Why was that so dynamic in terms of that Chavrusa? Okay. Great. So he'd fire back at him the Kenegdo of two dozen of those of why he has to think more deeply about it. And then what happened when Reish Lakish passed away? They went and replaced him with Eliezer ben Pedas, and he was what?
He would agree with everything.
That's brilliant. Great job, Rabbi Yochanan. And yet, what did that do to Rabbi Yochanan? Was that going and bucking his ego and making him feel good? No, it was devastating for him because he had lost the Kenegdo. He had learned to welcome the way in which they are going and pushing each other to greater heights. That was a lot of the magic of where he came from that. And so we have to go and look at a lot of these ways in which every day here we talked about at recess, building the Bein Adam LeChavero, within the base medrash, being able to go and see how it's Azir Kenegdo that you're going and doing to be able to raise the heights that each of you are going and getting to. And rather than going and recoiling from that pushback, we have to go and foster it and find ways that we can get stronger from it. When people are getting married, the Azir Kenegdo, the literally of it, where we have to go and retrain ourselves, that it's a helping hand that we are going and getting, rather than going and seeing that we are trying to do it on our own, that we can get stronger from doing that. And so that's where the Kenegdo is something we have to go change within our minds and be able to go and retrain ourselves and build that muscle to be able to go and see the way in which we get better from the setbacks. Okay, so now let's go back to our original question. Mar Cheshvan. Do we have any lens on why Cheshvan really does deserve to be Mar? What are some of the ways in which we can see that? Yehuda?
There's nothing hard about it.
Okay, nothing hard in what sense?
In the sense that it doesn't push you at all.
Okay, push you by doing what?
Fasting.
Okay, there's no fast day that we're doing what on the fast day to get stronger? Okay, well. Okay, well, what is the fast? What is. So, Shivas Arba Tammuz. What are we doing on that day? Tisha B'Av? Okay, what is it going and doing for us when it comes to our Yiddishkeit? Okay, in what sense?
We're doing tshuva.
Okay, forces us to think through, getting us out of the rut of what we're doing to rethink where we might have to go and do tshuva. Thinking about if we were not this generation where the Churban is over, how are we in some ways responsible for it continuing? These are the brachas of having the setbacks, the fast days, that strengthen us if we go and use it in the right way. If we're just on autopilot, not thinking about what's going on that day, then we're no different when we got through that. But if we use it in the right way, we are stronger for it. What does Cheshvan have? Any of those opportunities? Cheshvan is autopilot, cruising through, no fast days, no holidays. That's where we have to double down this month on being able to get stronger from all of this, even when we don't have those outside forces doing it. And if we don't, it will turn into a mar. And so that's where we have to go and see in a lot of ways how we have to go and take a different approach to this month. And then when we go and hit the bumps in the road in all walks of life, whether it's in the Jewish calendar, whether it's in the things you're being graded on, whether it's in the chavrusas and pushing each other, that's how we can go and get stronger. And this is where, if we don't do it right, then it turns really into a mar.